T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
Top of the hour brought to you by Northwestern Football. Join Coach Fitz and the 17th-ranked Cats this fall at Ryan Field. Matchups include Ohio State and Iowa. Season tickets on sale now at nusports.com. Let's talk to Jonah Carey. Make it feel like the Friday that it is. It always does when we talk to Jonah. We are looking forward to establishing contact with him in just a bit.
Yeah, he's going to pick up the phone. We'll be there. Some interesting storylines in Major League Baseball, to be sure. A number of historic accomplishments. Albert Pujols getting 2,000 RBI. Mike Fiers in his second no-hitter. The list you had Joey Gallo on yesterday, and I've got a list about home run robberies coming up. But this is, I mean, it's starting to feel a little bit more like the center of the baseball universe with the Cubs and Brewers right now. It's getting to that point. The NL Central is kind of deserved, I think, a little bit of that look.
It's good. The NL Central is becoming exactly what we thought it was going to be, with the exception of maybe some who thought that the Reds could have an opportunity to be competitive. And actually, did I see correctly that the Reds...
I know what you're going for here. Let me pull up the list.
Run differential.
Uh-huh.
The Reds are actually in a much better position than their record would show.
As it ranks, here's the run differential rankings in the NL Central right now. The Cubs lead at plus 57. The next best run differential are the St. Louis Cardinals at plus 26. The next best are the Reds at plus 23. The Brewers are at plus 2, and the Pirates are 41 under in their run differential. And that's not the way the standings line up right now. The Brewers have won some close ball games, it seems, 23-16. And the Reds are at the very bottom of the division at 16-22.
You know what their Pythagorean record is?
Off the top of my head, no.
Okay, you said the Reds are 16-22.
16-22
in fifth place. And when I mentioned Pythagorean, Bernstein, what's that fancy term?
Hey,
Pythagorean record is simply a way that your record is calculated to what it should be based on runs scored and runs allowed. Their Pythagorean record is 22-16.
Wow.
That's incredible. And also, that record is also used as a managerial statistic, sometimes saying, why can't the manager have this team at the record it's supposed to have based on the run differential? So, sorry, David Bell. Jonah Carey joins us now on the Al Pamonte Ford Hotline. Al Pamonte Ford, over 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. He is on Twitter at Jonah Carey, the Jonah Carey Podcast, and The Athletic. Happy Friday, Jonah. How's it going?
I'm great. How are you guys?
Wonderful. We were just talking about the NL Central, kind of the weird fact that the Reds have a plus run differential, but they're sunk at the bottom. The Brewers are at plus 2 and right there with the Cubs. How would you evaluate this Brewers squad as they've played the first month and a half of the season?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it hinges on their young pitching, right? You look at a guy like Corbin Burns, he starts off the season really rough, and it hurts them. And same thing with Freddie Peralta. He had some struggles, and Brandon Woodruff, to a certain extent, did as well. And now Woodruff is pitching really well, and they've sort of worked around the struggles of the other guys, and it's gone well for them, and it helps that the offense is a little bit more complete, a little bit more potent than it was last year, at least in some ways. Moustakas being there from the beginning of the year obviously gives them a lift. Aguiar starting to hit after a really slow start is really good. And, of course, they still got that bullpen. You know, it's minus Knebel, to be sure, but Hader's good, and they've got some supporting pieces there. So it's a good club. That was always going to be the key, was the two or three guys that they were moving out of the bullpen to the rotation. Could they make that work, or at least get by? And, you know, before they didn't make it work at all, and now it's good enough that the other parts of the team are playing well and supporting the rest.
We got our first no-hitter of the season, and it comes from a guy who my partner, Jonah, compared to a baseball Forrest Gump, that Mike Fiers just tends to find himself in certain places at certain times. And I am a connoisseur of the bad no-hitter. And there have been many of them. Edwin Jackson and
Philip Umber.
Well, that's not a perfect game.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, former White Sox Joe Cowley. And Fiers, again, he's got a name on the list. It's a guy who's thrown more than one, despite not missing many bats and not throwing very hard and maybe not even being that good. I think that's a baseball thing. It's pretty cool.
I will say this. I've only been to one no-hitter. It was as a fan. I was 16 years old. Tommy Green in 1991, who, number one, was not very good. Number two, 7 walks. And number three, I sat in the stands and completed my Romeo and Juliet journal, which was due in English class the next day, while my friend and I skipped out and went to an afternoon game. So there you go, Tommy Green.
That's on the list.
It's very much on the list. I'm very, very proud of this moment. So as for Fires, the thing about Fires is he's not a huge strikeout guy, but he's a big fly ball pitcher. And if fly balls don't go out of the ballpark, they're usually caught, right? I mean, it's grounders can cause you trouble, and they're not going to hurt you in a major way, but they can certainly break up a no-hitter. But if you put the ball in the air and you put the ball in the air and you put the ball in the air, if the conditions are right and the wind's blowing in, or you know, maybe you've just put enough on those pitches that spin and they, you know, land at the warning track or whatever, you can do things like that. We see fly ball pitchers. I mean, anecdotally, if I had to guess, I would bet that fly ball pitchers are more prone to throwing no-nos than ground ball pitchers are, because a ground ball pitcher did his job, but the ball kind of squibs through. You know what I mean? So I could see it with Fires, although, again, he doesn't have that great swing and miss stuff, which is often a key component of a no-hitter, is strikeouts are a great way to prevent guys, obviously, from getting hit.
So we saw just the other day that Albert Pujols joined a very exclusive list. He is there with Alex Rodriguez and with Hank Aaron on the list of official 2,000 RBI guys. Look, Pujols' career is a fascinating one to me. I was at a game where he hit 3 home runs out of Wrigley Field, and he probably could have hit 9 if they'd kept pitching to him the rest of the way. RBI are a strange stat as they're kind of construed throughout their context over baseball's era. When you look at Albert Pujols, and when you look at the potential end of Albert Pujols' career, knowing he has that many years and that many dollars left on the contract, what do you see? What's important for baseball fans to know about Pujols?
Well, I mean, we have to recognize just how good he is. It's okay to talk about him in the same breath as A-Rod and Hank Aaron, because his numbers are really not that far off from the best of the best. We're talking about one of the top of my head 10, 12 hitters of all time statistically, and you know, at least in terms of counting stats, he can get to top probably 8 or something like that by the end, by RBI, by home runs, by hits, by stuff like that. Doesn't make him a better hitter, of course. You know that, I know that, if he's putting up 270 on base percentages and slugging 400 but hitting 20 home runs. But you know, it's all right to have a tail to your career too. And the bottom line is, at the beginning of his career, those 11 years with the Cardinals were just out of sight. I mean, from the moment he came into the big leagues and hit, what, he hit 330 with 37 home runs in his rookie season. I mean, he was just a beast from the get-go. And, I mean, I remember I wrote about it in the Extra 2%, where the Tampa Bay Devil Rays at the time were scouting him, and they wouldn't take a flyer on him in the zillions round, and how, what a loss that was. And, you know, the bottom line is that 28 other teams did the same thing. Nobody wanted this guy because he had a bad body, and they thought he might be a catcher or a third baseman, and they didn't really know what to do with him. And all you have to do with a guy who can rake is just put him somewhere. It didn't matter. Mickey Cabrera, doesn't matter. Put him at first base. And so, you know, sometimes you overemphasize positional flexibility and all that, even though it's a key part of value. If a guy can rake, you really need to find him a spot. And the Cardinals, to their credit, did it. And, you know, he's continued his career with the Angels, and he'll end up as one of the all-time greats for sure.
We've been trying to figure out what to do with Yu Darvish, or if there's anything that should be done with Yu Darvish. He can't find the plate. The stuff is fine. We know how many pitches he has. He says he feels good. But, I mean, he's just got too many pitches, and boy, he's leading baseball in all of walk rate. He's caught a case of the Chatwoods. And I'm not sure, is this a problem that needs to be solved? And if so, how does one go about solving it?
If he played for the LA Dodgers, he would have a phantom IL stint, or maybe 3 of them already by this point in the season. It's sort of a wonder that teams don't do this more often. You know, make up a bad back or whatever, and really just try to break it down and go to work on the guy, because there's something going on. I mean, he had occasional command issues before, but, you know, in his prime, he was one of the best pitchers in all of baseball, and this is new. This is a case of the Chatwoods. And it's something that you can leave in there, because the Cubs don't have the best bullpen in the world right now, given the injuries that they have. Better than it was earlier in the season, certainly, but still undermanned. And you can't necessarily rely on your offense to bail you out of 7-6 games every day. So, yeah, I would be looking to IL him, and I would try to figure something out and think about the long term rather than the right now. And even if it takes 3-4 weeks or whatever, send him to instructional leagues. So have him throw an A-ball, have him work on stuff. Because you can't have him solve these problems on a major league mound. I would definitely be concerned. This is not the Darvish they signed up for, and it's not a Darvish who's going to help them toward a championship.
You know, kind of on the periphery here has been, there's a story I was reading on Baseball America. Maury Brown wrote it a couple of days ago about baseball's pending expansion. And I don't think about baseball expansion and the imminent nature of it the same way you do in the NHL, where you just kind of, it's happening and that'll be fine and you go on. Baseball expansion seems terrifying to me, to be quite honest. If you had to put two teams in cities, where would you put them? Where are the likely places? And what do you think, Jonah, expansion does to baseball in its first couple of years?
Well, I can give you the obvious answer, the non-obvious answer. The obvious answer, you're talking to a homer, so I'm going to say that they should put a team in Montreal. The non-obvious answer is that attendance doesn't necessarily matter that much. It's a TV market, and it's really finding a way to raise revenues outside of the field. You don't have to put butts in seats prolifically in today's day and age to make money. You can do it another way. So now you're looking for markets. So let's say Portland, Oregon, as an example, is not necessarily a good idea because they're kind of boxed in by Seattle. So you're not really capturing the Northwest the way that you otherwise might. Whereas Montreal, you're just sharing it with essentially one other city in all of Canada. So there's some potential there for the Expos to join up with the Blue Jays, Expos, whatever you call a Montreal team, to be able to share revenue with the Blue Jays across all of the country. You know, other markets that could fit the bill. I mean, I wonder what they could do in Vegas. If you go to a retractable roof and you accept the fact that you're going to play five games outdoors and most of the time it's going to be indoors, they play in Arizona. Why can't they play in Vegas? You already have a football team coming in Vegas. You have a hockey team. That would certainly make a lot of sense. I know that Commissioner Manfred has talked about Mexico as being a possibility, but, I mean, Mexico City, you know, the air quality is terrible. The elevation is higher than it is in Colorado. That might not play all that well. Monterey, do they have the population base in terms of wealth, in terms of local businesses that could support the team? That's a question mark. So I think that there's all these things are up in the air, but the thing to keep in mind is there hasn't been expansion in 21 years. The reason that we're more comfortable with it or more used to it in hockey is because hockey's been doing it much more often, that we've got Columbuses and we've got new teams coming. Baseball hasn't had new teams, again, since 1998. It's a really long time. It's the longest we've gone in between rounds of expansion since expansion started in 1961. And not for nothing, but interleague every day is stupid. It's stupid that the Twins are playing the Padres. Nobody cares. And we need to get to a point where we have 16 teams in each league. Expansion does that. It's good for the sport. I have no problem with it. And even if it wasn't in Montreal, I'd have no problem with it. I think that the time has come to make it happen.
I just wonder, 21 years is a long time. We're just fundamentally changing a lot of things and in baseball. I don't mean just with expansion, but with pending rules that could change and a mound that could get moved to 95 feet away from home plate, all this kind of stuff. Do you have a sense that Rob Manfred or the Office of Baseball have a priority list on their changes, or do they think they can do all of this stuff at once and just make money on television contracts, everything else be damned?
Oh, let's be clear. Money is the number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 75 priorities. That's when we say what is the priority list, it's all money. And this is going to be used like anything else. You know, the pitch clock or whatever change you want to make is all part of negotiations, and it's to make sure that the teams keep as much of their share of the pie as possible. And by definition, the players keep as little of their share of the pie as possible. I mean, I cannot help but be cynical, having lived through 94, having lived through the Lords of the Realm era, understanding that even though it's more subtle now, it's still going on. Players are seeing less and less of the share of money. So, yeah, you know, expansion is in there somewhere, but it really just comes down to dollars and cents. There's nothing, you know, for the good of the game or whatever, the best interest of baseball. I'm sorry, I don't believe any of that stuff. I don't think that Rob Manfred is a bad guy. I just think that the job of the commissioner of any sport is to support the interests of the owners who hire you and can ultimately fire you. And those owners don't really care about much of anything except making money, which is their right because they own for-profit businesses.
Talking baseball with Jonah Carey on the Bernstein and McKnight Show, Sports Radio 670 The Score. Jonah, we had a conversation earlier in the show with Cubs left-handed reliever Kyle Ryan, and it's an amazing story. He was nearly out of baseball. With his word, he said he couldn't hit the broadside of a barn, and he was getting close to being done playing, and nobody called him except the Cubs. And the Cubs said, "We noticed something. We can fix you." And they set a computer in front of him and showed him video and told him what they were going to do with his arm slot. And they did. They figured it out. And now he's contributing at the major league level. So here's what I'm wondering. When will we, as observers, broadcasters, writers,
catch up with the quality of the scouting the teams are doing and notice these guys ourselves? When can we bridge that gap that I can go to The Athletic and read Jonah Carey says, here are six guys currently toiling away or near being out of the game that are fixable?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think, you know, Saris does a pretty good job of that for The Athletic, I will say. I try. And I think that you've got other people out there who can do things like that, but ultimately it comes down to what do you spend your days doing? Somebody like Eno or I might have other responsibilities. We want to look after what the Cincinnati Reds middle infield situation is part of our coverage in addition to this kind of thing. Whereas if you are one of 25 people working in baseball ops for, let's say, the Cincinnati Reds, then you make it your business to find things like that. So I think that there's just a matter of allocation of resources. But, you know, things have come along. I mean, I can remember when Voris McCracken came out with, you know, the dip theory and the idea that balls in play has a lot to do with defense and, you know, a lot of it is luck and so forth. And that was a breakthrough, and breakthroughs happen all the time. And so I think that somebody, some enterprising soul, will listen to this segment or notice it him or herself, and we'll go ahead and try to make something like that happen. So I think we'll get there, but it'll probably be something grassroots where somebody just decides to run with it. And then, of course, the problem is if you're like that, then you're going to get picked off. Mike Sass got picked off. Dan Fox got picked off. All these people get picked off by teams because teams do not want this out there in the public domain. They want it for themselves. So I think we will eventually catch up. But even when that catch-up occurs, the teams will be onto something else. They'll figure it out to six pitchers to six. They'll be onto six hitters. They'll be onto six fielders. They'll be onto something that we haven't even conceived of, and that will take another 5 or 10 years. As much as the research is very good in the public domain, it's much better in the private domain.
Jonah, appreciate it. As always, great talking with you. Have a good weekend.
Thank you, fellas. You too.
That is Jonah Carey of The Athletic, and the Jonah Carey podcast joins us regularly on Fridays to talk baseball. Our buddy Sahadev Sharma just finished up in the Cubs locker room, and he is going to swing by and let us know what he is seeing as the Cubs and the Brewers get set to go. We also have $1,000 cash to give away. We are Bernstein and McKnight, and we are here at Gallagher Way. We are getting ready for the game because of Xfinity, the exclusive internet provider of the Chicago Cubs. And as I mentioned, it's Impossibly Adorable Toddler Day.
It's that day.
I'm a little disappointed that one particular Impossibly Adorable Toddler isn't here when all the other ones are here.
Somebody
should be representing
what
here.
What the hell?
Yeah, my personal favorite in my Impossibly Adorable Toddler rankings actually didn't make it here, even though his dad made it here today.
Well, we'll follow on Instagram. I'm sure we can find a couple of videos. That's the best way to do it.
I think you're probably right. So Sahadev Sharma will share his latest Cubs thoughts. He can talk about Chris Bryant and his axe handle bat, among other things.
Yeah, big changes and big swings for KB. Sahadev Sharma is going to join us on the other side. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
You get how emotional people are about what you were suspended for. Do you understand why they're booing when they boo? And
I totally understand. I totally understand. It's a serious issue. And, you know, what can I do? Get better day by day. You know, that's all I can do, and be the example of a person that's trying to make things right.
That's Addison Russell doing the morning walk back of the previous comments that were featured in Steve Greenberg's Sun Times article. The segment brought to you by the Chicago Dogs. Baseball, hot dogs, fireworks. Come see Carlos Zambrano's comeback at the Chicago Dogs, your premier minor league baseball team, located in Rosemont. Opening day, May 17th. All fans receive an iconic hot dog costume and will set a world record for the largest pack of wieners in one location. Tickets at thechicagodogs.com. The Chicago Dogs, baseball with everything. So Jay Zawoski just put up a picture on Twitter. That's an intense looking Sahadev Sharma right there.
Uh-oh.
Sitting in between us here at Gallagher Way. Sahadev Sharma on Twitter at Sahadev Sharma. He writes for The Athletic. You were just in the locker room. You were talking with Addison Russell. Where are we here? Already at this?
Yeah, I think we're basically where we started. You know, a lot of what he said in Steve Greenberg's article, it's really hard to process and take any other way but in a negative fashion, right? You read that and you say, this guy still doesn't get it. There are too many things. The talk about, I play for the Cubs, I'm out here busting my butt, trying to win a World Series, it's on them if they boo. That's really tone deaf and really just seems to lack awareness, but it's also
what I thought exactly.
Yeah,
it was a setback.
Yeah, it certainly. This is also someone that, you know, often chooses the wrong words and says things that he doesn't, you know, truly mean the way they come out. And he says them and they just sound terrible. That's part of the problem here, I think. And you can't make excuses for him. He's got to own all of this, and he's got to become a better person, and he's got to constantly work at it. My general feeling is it's really a sad situation, and what I want to see most is that his family, the kids, the women in his life, the mothers involved, that they have good lives, that they are safe, that they are happy, that things go better for them going forward. And that should be the bottom line, but it's so hard to talk about baseball and to talk about other things without focusing on that. And Addison's just, you know, this felt inevitable to me that he was going to say something that was going to be a step back, because it's really hard when you're talking about difficult situations constantly it's not going to stop. There's no chance that that was the last interview, that today was the last interview about this topic. He's going to different cities. He's going to meet other national writers. It's going to be a process for him that he has to face, and he needs to hopefully grow as a person and use his words better and understand that this is a huge deal, and every word he says is going to be picked apart, and deservedly so.
I agree with you toward the end. I absolutely agree with the situation they find themselves in. I find it very difficult. The threshold is very high to judge Addison Russell's actions based on the words he gives you, because sure. I don't think Addison's very good at making words. That's okay. That happens. And I don't think that it's the right thing to do to judge this comment or judge his actions based on this comment. Unfortunately, for either Cubs fans who are displeased with the decision to bring Addison Russell back, who are obviously angry about domestic violence and having someone here who has allegedly committed it, I'm the first guy. I didn't think Addison Russell needed to be back on this team. That said, he is not a player whose words are going to dictate the actions for me. And unfortunately, we have to take the Cubs' word for how his actions are going, and that creates and rightfully so, that's where it should be with this process, but that creates a filter, I think, that is very difficult to see through when the issue at hand is domestic violence.
Sure. No, it's going to be impossible. Everything he says and has said is going to be picked apart. It's just reality. It's going to happen on Twitter, it's going to happen in articles, it's going to happen on talk radio, and it's just inevitable. It's going to be a hard process, not just for him. I'm not talking about him. I'm talking about for us dealing with this, trying to really understand what's going on, because we don't really know what's going on. We can't see how he's growing. It's really hard to decipher if he's growing as a person. And you said how we feel about whether he should have come back or not. They've made that decision, right? We've parsed that and we've talked about that. I think we all have shared our feelings on that, whether it's I've written about it, you guys have talked about it. And I think all three of us agreed that he shouldn't be back at the time. We said that. Mm-hmm. Well, now they've made the decision, right? They've invested in him growing as a person, becoming a better person. So I feel like we can still have our feelings and what we believe, but now is not the say. Well, they need to release him now. That decision's been made, right? If he makes mistakes going forward and off the field issues occur, then yes, obviously the decision should be very, very easy and very quick. But right now, I don't think that's the topic anymore. Should he be on the team or not? Because no. They've made that decision. So now we need to deal with what they do going forward.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Nothing beats playoff hockey, and the Chicago Wolves are tied at 2 games apiece with Iowa in the division finals. The Wolves return home Monday night at 7 for Game 6 at Allstate Arena. Tickets start at only $15. Visit ChicagoWolves.com. Is something to be done about Yu Darvish? Is this something that they've got to figure out, or is he just in the process of coming back healthy and just figuring out who he is?
Yeah, I think it's multiple. It's very layered. He obviously needs to get out of his own head. They keep talking about that. This isn't something that's conjured up by the media saying what's going on in his head. They've openly talked about it. He's openly talked about it. I asked Joe today if Bob Tewksbury is working with them, and yeah, they have a kind of a plan where he's going to be working with them. I think he just needs to. I think it's as simple as what they say: just go out there and throw, pitch. Don't think about the scouting report while you're out there. Everybody, all the baseball players I talked to over the years, when they talk about thinking about things and preparing for a start, that's all in between the start, right? Or even a hitter. They're like Chris Bryant. He's not up there thinking about his mechanics when he's at the plate. Those are things that you work on in between games, pitchers, mechanics, scouting reports, all those things that's dealt with in between the start. You got to trust your catcher and just trust your instincts and then just go out there and pitch. Obviously easier said than done. Everybody said that now. All the players are like, listen, there was someone that we talked to yesterday that I think it was Rizzo. Bryant. Bryant was talking about his own struggles to start the season. He's like, you get in your own head, and you just need to just stop, go out there, and remember, oh, wait, I'm good at this. Let me just trust myself and trust my body and go and do this.
Well, I heard Joe peeved for the first time yesterday. That was the first time there was clear exasperation in the voice of Joe Madden that was different than sort of cool, everything's fine Joe that we've heard previously.
Well, that's because there isn't an answer. There is no easy answer. There's no different answer than what he's been giving, right? It's go out there and pitch, stop thinking about it, and just go out there and pitch. And when like we've all said, it's easier said than done, so he just needs to go do that. And then when Joe has to answer these questions from us, and he's like, what else am I supposed to say? I've told you guys this already. So he just needs to go do that. There's nothing much else to do. I think the next question is, well, then how did the Cubs handle it baseball wise what do they do, right? I think it seemed like this was a problem coming into the season, having two essentially starters in the bullpen. That may work out in their favor. Mike Montgomery was brilliant yesterday. He's got this swing and miss curveball all of a sudden that I talked to him about it, and it really seems like a good pitch, something that can last. He also, he can go 5, 6, 7 innings. I think the best case scenario right now is you let you go out there. He's going 3, 4, 5 innings, right? If he can figure something out and get his head straight, he's also coming back off surgery. Get his command back post-surgery. All that stuff matters. If he can get it back, just go out there. You have two guys in the bullpen that you can kind of rely on to eat innings and not kill your bullpen because Yu Darvish is only going 4 or 5 innings. So that's right now. Let's see if he can figure it out. It's the same. It's a little different, but it's similar to Tyler Chatwood last year, where you're not pulling the plug in May.
Oh, it's way too similar to Tyler Chatwood, unfortunately.
And how long did that take before he stopped starting? Where were they? July? When that finally stopped? So we're in May. We're in early May. He's not going to be taken out of the rotation just yet outside of injuries. So you just have to kind of hope that it all comes together, or you're going to have decisions to make later on in the season.
How are the Cubs preparing for the short term and long term without Ben Zobrist? And what's to be known? Is anything here? I mean, obviously it's a personal issue. I'm not prying for that stuff. If family is family, if that's what it is. But
honestly, there's nothing. There's nothing that we know as far as the media goes. It's very private. Really, it's not even like something that they're talking to us off the record, like, hey, so you guys know it's going to be a couple weeks or anything like that. It's nothing. It's radio silence. And I understand that if it's a private personal matter, fine. We have no business knowing this stuff. All we need to know is, hey, it's indefinite. We don't know when he's coming back. So what do they do? I mean, that's why Addison Russell's here right now. Daniel DeCiasso is slowly coming back. It sounds like Joe's contemplating putting him in the starting lineup tomorrow or Sunday. He hasn't made that decision, but DeCiasso's progressing. Bodie's in a bit of a slump, but, he's a guy that can obviously is going to play more often. And he seems like the type of guy that isn't just going to fall off a cliff and stay in this slump forever. He's a productive major league player. He's kind of establishing himself as that. So they have options and they have players that can fill that role, so to say. But yeah, obviously Ben Zobrist, you want him back. You'd like to hope that he's healthy and productive when he does come back.
Talking with Sahadev Sharma of The Athletic and the Bernstein and McKnight Show here at Gallagher Way, our Xfinity broadcast here on The Score. Cool story about Chris Bryant going to the axe handle bat. And where some people noticed it, and sometimes guys will just they'll grab somebody else's bat, or sometimes you break a bat and it's just the next one here, use mine. We've all heard stories about it, whether it was Anthony Rizzo and Matt Caesar and using a lighter bat later in the year, or whether it's Willie Randolph and Bucky Dent and all these famous stories. This is different. This bat was literally custom made for Bryant. It was just a matter of when he decided to actually use it.
Yeah, no, he's been messing with axe bats for years now. And they've been messing back. They've been kind of like going back and forth. They're like, okay, well, what feels right? What feels good? What do you want to feel? What are you looking to accomplish? Let's work with your swing, with your hand size, with everything. And they've been going back and forth over the years. They kind of customized this one for him. But these baseball players aren't just going to pick up a bat and say, like, okay, I'm changing bats. This is my new bat forever. This was just kind of a random occurrence, and it worked out where he brought it out into the bat rack. He told me that he doesn't always bring it out into the bat rack. It's not always his backup bat. It's not always his second or third choice. It's rarely out in the bat rack. For some reason, on this day, he decided to bring it out with his bats and put it in the bat rack, or have it put out in the bat rack, and it paid off in a really interesting way. I was careful and made sure, and I told Chris, I'm not trying to write a story where the bat is the reason you're good again.
No, but it's quite a coincidence.
But
though.
It's interesting, and you look at the numbers. There was data in there that I provided where his exit velocity is up significantly using this bat, and other players swear by it. Mookie Betts, Carlos Correa, George Springer. These are great players who, last year's MVP and Mookie Betts, really good players that are thriving with this bat. And Brian even admits it feels really comfortable. It feels natural. It feels like, he even said when he swings, it almost doesn't allow him to swing off, right? You have to swing a certain way, and if you don't, you can feel it, because the way the bat works, it works so your swing is quick and fast through the zone, and you're staying in the zone, and you can't like really change your bat path. And I think it's really fascinating, and I also think Chris Bryant's just immensely talented and put in the work to figure some things out. And whether he had the axe bat or not, he probably was. It was inevitable that he was going to get hot again.
A couple of years ago, I was working with the White Sox. I was told by a player or two and a coach as well that these bats, it was like soccer back in the 90s when we were told, like, oh, this is, it's coming, it's taking over. Soccer's the new sport of America.
The metric system,
it never
the killer
got,
bees.
We're just not there yet. Yeah. I was told the same, somewhat similar, about this axe handle bat, that it was going to sweep through the big leagues. Do you get that sense at all, or will it take more Bryants?
Yeah, no, I think it's, the thing is, it's just that players, if it doesn't work right away, or if they don't feel comfortable right away, they're not going to, it's not going to happen, right? Yeah. I mean, they like what they like. They've been playing baseball with the round knob since they were kids. It's got to be difficult to completely change that.
Like, well, there's got to be a job security aspect to it, too.
What's going to happen is the kids are going to want the axe bat.
Exactly.
That's the way this happens.
I agree.
Is when one kid on the 8U travel team has it.
Be the rich kid.
That's when it becomes a thing.
Well, no, that's the thing. You're not wrong. Once they start using it as kids, then it becomes more prevalent. It's just like data, right? The reason we're seeing so many pitch labs and data forward pitching coaches is because kids nowadays are doing that stuff. They're going to drive line and learning about the data and learning about spin rate. So all these kids that are drafted now, they've already experienced this stuff. You don't hear John Lester talking about spin rate and data and stuff like that because he didn't grow up with that. And it doesn't make sense, and it's not comfortable for him. But these guys are all growing up with it. So if they start growing up with an axe bat, it becomes comfortable, and it becomes just, this is what we do.
Connor has a rule on this show. Anytime driveline is mentioned,
that's right.
What is it? Two?
Anytime a driveline is mentioned, two bros at driveline do their fist bump, and then they have to crush a Red Bull. Like, that's what happens.
Yeah. So they're
so
very
excited
about it.
Yeah, you have now set two bros at driveline into motion. They are now shotgunning a Red Bull, and they will fist bump.
I'm not surprised. Sahadev, definitely happens.
Thanks a lot for your time, man.
Thank you for having me, guys.
That is Sahadev Sharma of The Athletic. When we come back, we're going to give you a chance to win $1,000 in cash. I have the text keyword coming up. Don't go anywhere. Lawrence Holmes will join us in just a little bit, too, right here on The Score.
Neil Walker, the veteran former Pirate, we'll take a strike. I mean, ballplayer pirate, not an actual pirate rampaging on the high seas. Do you have a sound for a pirate?
You asking me?
Yeah, I thought since you're my partner, that would be a logical question. Here's the 0-1 pitch on the way, and it's low and inside.
Do I have walk the plank?
No, how would you verbalize this sound? A-R-G-H.
Arr.
Yeah, there you go.
There we
good
go.
Job, Pat. Yeah. You were dying to do that.
I was. I'll come clean. That's why I brought it up. Here's the 2-1 delivery, missing a little bit upstairs. Cubs lead by 2 in the second inning.
Could you do it again?
You heard it.
It's driving me nuts. It's time for your chance to win $1,000 in cash on the score. This hour's keyword is nose. It's N-O-S-E. Nose. Again, with a homophone.
Nose.
N-O-S-E, not K-N-O-W-S. It is N-O-S-E, nose, to 72881 by the end of the hour. The keyword is nose to 72881. One randomly selected nationwide entrant from this hour will win. Please don't text and drive. Message and data rates may apply. And actually, you could have N-O-E-S and acceptable N-O-S. So this is
you
N-O-S-E.
You can't do those reads anymore. Give me those reads. We can't have Crossword King doing those reads.
Dan's taking the fun out of $1,000.
I'm sorry. I apologize.
And there is no limit. The man can take the fun out of a million. Okay, so real quick, I have a list for you.
Yes,
I have a list. Lawrence is coming up in just a second. Yep. If you feel like there's been more home run robberies this year than ever before, you are right.
Really?
The highest season total is 65. We are on pace for 83 home run robberies.
We've
this
done this
season.
Before. I know they track these now. They define it by either by proximity to the wall,
yes,
whether or not it would have gone.
Yeah, we had Trey Mancini, Jackie Bradley Jr. took a walk off a back. Josh Reddick robbed Hunter Pence. We are on pace for 83 home run robberies this season. Your top five in career home run robberies reads thusly from 5-1. You want to make any guesses?
Oh, Torrey Hunter.
Torrey Hunter's on the list. He's number two.
Devon White?
Not on the list.
Edmonds?
All very recent guys, because this is a fairly recent
Byron data set. Buxton.
Not Buxton yet.
Engel. Sure Adam Engel.
Not on the list. Ichiro Suzuki is number 5 with 10. Mike Trout has 11. Adam Jones has 11. Torrey Hunter is second with 12.
Kiermaier?
And Carlos Gomez has 13.
Tall and athletic.
And it's
going to
be it's going to be based on what ballparks you play in, too, because you're not going to get a home run robbery at this one.
A lot of thank yous. We want to thank our engineer, Rich Wyatt, Tito the Challenged, Brian Gertz had the video feed, Jay Zawoski, Rick Camp, and Ray Diaz. We thank our guests. They were Kyle Ryan, Sam Fold, Jonah Carey, and Sahadev Sharma. That was really fun.
Good chats today.
Yeah, really good baseball-y stuff today. A lot going on. I think we got to a ton of stuff. And we're going to get to Lawrence Holmes, who is currently sunbathing, and he will be in the tent joining us next on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.